Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Steve Austin's show is brought to you free today by White Castle. White Castle sliders are a tasty go-to option for fun and satisfying snacks or meals anytime. They're the perfect snack to have while I'm watching wrestling or when I just need a quick bite. I love that chicken slider has 19 grams of protein per serving as well. Easy way for me to get some protein in just a few minutes. From their original and cheese sliders to other meat options, including chicken, turkey, or sausage, you can get the same great taste you've come to expect from their restaurants right at home, ready in minutes. And for all my vegetarian friends, don't worry. You can also enjoy the restaurant quality taste of White Castle sliders with their veggie or black bean slider options. They sent me some of their delicious OG sliders, cheese, veggie, and black and bean sliders, and I dig them. Check out some great recipes at WhiteCastle.com or pick up White Castle sliders and freezer aisles nationwide. White Castle is easy to heat and fun to eat, and that's the bottom line.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm over here in Marina Del Rey, California, a Sunday afternoon as I record the opening of this podcast. Been raining out here in Los Angeles. It's a dark, drizzly day. Kind of been cooped up, trying to keep a little social distance, as they have been advising us to do all around the United States, all around the world, with the coronavirus, you know, still out there spreading and causing a lot of harm. Hey, man, if everybody's saying keep your distance from people, don't gather in masses, don't. Man, we've got to work together. We've got to work smart to be able to flatten that curve out, and so that we can ride this storm out and get into the warmer months, and hopefully this thing lays down a little bit. But, man, we've got to work together on this. We've got to be smart, but we really have to come together. We've got to hang in there. We've got to be tough. But the biggest thing is we've got to be smart. So, man, listen to what they're saying about this thing. And hopefully this thing will flatten down and we'll come out of it and things will kick on back again. But we've got a storm to ride through. So let's ride through this storm. Take a swig of this margarita right here. Broken Skull Ranch margaritas. It is Sunday. That is the day that I mix one of my concoctions and think about the events of the week that just transpired. Hey, man, I hope you enjoy the conversation I've got for you today. I'm talking with a guy named Mike Mason, former freestyle motocross guy, was in back air, you know, kind of towards the beginning. And Mike has done some really interesting things in that sport, and he's kind of retired, slowing down. He's taken a few beatings. He's a young man sport. Also, my buddy Cliff Campbell jumps in on the conversation. Hell, they've been lifelong friends. And Cliff was his mechanic that built all of his bikes when he was in the, you know, motocross stage of his life and then started getting into the freestyle motocross stuff. If you remember, I had Brian Deegan from the old Metal Militia days on a podcast a few weeks ago. Brian has his podcast. It drops every week. You know, all of his whole family is centered around motocross, and his daughter Haley is trying to break into the NASCAR scene. So Mike Mason is former freestyle motocross guy. Cliff Campbell was his mechanic. Cliff Campbell is the guy that hauls all my my four-wheelers around for me. I'm trying to get him to bring my Ford Bronco up here to the mean streets of Los Angeles, man. I've been driving around in that green Ford Focus for long enough. And, hell, I need to get back up in the air and get some four-wheel drive power at my disposal. So looking forward to getting that thing back up here. It's just an interesting time to do a podcast, just with so many things going on, so many emotions, so many unknowns out there, what to expect, what's coming next, what are the new rules going to be. We've just all got to work together and ride this thing out, and that's what's first and foremost on my mind. This conversation happened about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I was in Nevada. I'm talking with Mike Mason, Cliff Campbell. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll come back on here in a little bit to wrap this thing up and bring it home. Let's all stick together. Let's ride this thing out. Let's be smart. Enjoy the conversation. At the Broken Skull Ranch, Silver State, Nevada. Mike Mason, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Hell, I'm hanging in here. I got my old buddy, Cliffy C., Cliff Campbell, guy who hauls all my cars around, dude. We're about to talk motocross, freestyle motocross, and hell, I didn't know. You was kind of keeping on the down low. I didn't know you was a hell of a mechanic.
Oh, I appreciate that. I kind of made a career change here last few years, but yeah, 20 years, supercross, motocross, freestyle motocross, X Games, 14 years, all kinds of different riders from Mason here to Brian Deegan, Jeremy Twitch Stenberg. A couple different supercross teams, but yeah, now I haul your cars around.
So where were you guys during the formative years? Because Mike, you're 38, mm-hmm. and Cliff, you're 39, and then Deegan, he was just over at the house. I think he's 45, give or take.
Yeah.
That whole freestyle motocross movement, kind of like, what, 97, 98?
Yeah, yeah, towards the late 90s there.
So where were you guys at? Because I know you started racing at about four, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I started racing when I was four, and just did the thing, you know, race locally, try to do some amateur nationals here and there, never really did much with it. And kind of right when I turned professional, freestyle motocross had started coming out with, you know, Deegan. I mean, even Jeremy McGrath, who's our top supercross racer, he was out, you know, in the hills riding. And I think me, Cliffy, Dustin Miller, a bunch of my friends around here, we just got inspired by their videos. And I mean, as you know, here in Nevada, we have endless free riding and trail riding. So we were always out in the desert. And I think their passion for freestyle motocross kind of overrode my passion for racing, and I saw a window there, and me and Cliffy decided it was good to jump on it.
Well, I think you said, in doing some research about you, I guess your father rode, and so you mm-hmm. started riding bike around the age of four,
yeah.
but you competed, you know, as a racer for give or take 15, 20 years?
Yeah, yeah, probably 15 years and probably pro for 7 or 8 years. I did a couple supercrosses, some outdoor nationals, and then when Cliffy jumped on board with me, we actually did the Arena Cross Series because they had a halftime jump show that was paying $500 a night. So that was my pitch to Cliff. I'm like, I feel it, because I had some pretty decent tricks for yeah. back then, you know, and I'm like, I feel like we can maybe make $1,000, and then if we make the main events, you know, maybe a couple grand. And, you know, on Sundays, if I made all four main events and won both jump offs, Outback was our treat. So I really took care of the old boy over here.
You know, man, I represent Kawasaki Motorsports, so I get a chance to run across Jeremy McGrath, mm-hmm. you know, pretty often. So I guess he's seven-time Supercross champion.
Yeah.
Back in my day, you know, we was growing up on guys like Bob Hurricane Hanna, and all we knew was it was called motocross. And my first dirt bike, it was actually an old KE100, which was a dual sport, took the blinkers off and everything, and it was a two-stroke bike, and about 5 inches of travel in that suspension.
Yeah.
And second gear was out, but man, I was off and running. So, dude, where did it all change? What's the difference between motocross and supercross and then the arena cross that you're talking about?
Yeah, so motocross is the original, the outdoors, the rough tracks, the long motos, the heat, and supercross is more the show aspect of it. You know, you got the stadiums like Angels or Anaheim Stadium where the Angels play, 70,000 people, you know, all, they're going to New York City, all kinds of places, you know, with the supercross thing. And that's kind of what really put our sport on the map is Jeremy McGrath. He came out and just, you know, he was a rookie in 1993 and won the title, just started dominating. And I mean, we started to see the stadiums fill up, and because he had like, he was showtime for a reason. He was out doing knack-knacks over the triples and, you know, dyeing his hair, earring. I mean, motocross was just your straight sport, you know, old guys just out there, just kind of dickheads in a way, you know, and McGrath just changed that. I mean, we saw 1-800-COLLECT come in, all these outside sponsors, and that's really where our sport took off, you know. And then you go, you fast forward, you know, 5-6 years from there, and freestyle motocross came in, and freestyle motocross started generating some mainstream, and you know, it all blew up. And with that, you know, you start getting side series like the Arena Cross, which is small arenas. I think the racing in Arena Cross is awesome because it's tight, you know, it's an arena with 15 bikes on it, and there's guys going into the wall, everyone's punting each other, there's fights in the pits, and you know, the sport just, I mean, that mid to late 90s surge of the sport was really what we needed, and I'm thankful for it because it's the reason I'm sitting here now.
Well, when you started, I mean, like take me through the process of, first of all, just getting on a bike and then trying to get a sponsor, because that was one of the things with Deegan. He was, you know, he was good, but it wasn't quite enough good to get a factory sponsor,
yeah.
So it was hard to compete on your money against guys that got factory rides.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, racing was, it was so hard, and being up here, we didn't have supercross tracks to test on. Everything's in Southern California. So, you know, if you're down there in Southern California and you're winning all the races, you're going fast, like Suzuki's going to see you, Honda's going to see you, you know, but up here in Reno, no one sees you. And we didn't have Instagram and social media and all that to like hey, look at me, I'm doing this. You know, it was more just grind away. I mean, I was riding outdoors and then going and racing at Anaheim Supercross. You know, I had no practice on it whatsoever. And I'm stoked that I stuck with racing as long as I did. I made a Supercross main, made some outdoor nationals, got some top tens in arena cross, but it got to a point where me and Cliffy were talking like, you know, this freestyle thing's getting big and you're the only guy out there. And like at X Games, you're the only guy that, you know, let's say 70,000 people are watching. I'm not blended in. Cause even if you're sixth place in a Supercross, you're not getting a lot of coverage, TV time or whatever. So we made the swap and it was one of the best decisions I ever did. Like I said, I'm stoked that I stuck with racing, but you know, you can only get free parts and stuff for so long. It was like, I needed to start trying to make money with this thing.
Hey man, you just said the knack, and I was watching an interview with Jeremy McGrath, and he was talking to a dude who obviously knows a lot more about racing than I did, but the trick was already invented. He just happened to do it while crossing the finish line one time on a big win. So what is the knack?
It's basically you just stick one leg over the other side of the bike. So, well, it's a sketchy trick. I mean, your foot can slip off, you know, like a lot of guys have gotten hurt on it, but like you said, I mean, it was something that was done on BMX bikes and then a couple guys did on a moto. But, I mean, McGrath came out in opening ceremonies and did it over a triple. And it was like, because, I mean, you're talking about just taking your feet off or, you know, taking one hand off over the finish line. So when he did that, it was like the eye opener.
Yeah. It's kind of a statement win.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, so what were you thinking when you started seeing, hey, these freestyle motocross guys are pretty damn cool? And, you know, Metal Militia was kind of born out of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I read Larry Linkogle's book, and he was kind of out there.
Yeah.
You know, and then Deegan was kind of in that pack as well. They started Metal Militia, and then it became a thing.
Yeah.
So how long did it take for you to know that, hey, let me try this? Because I've been watching some of your videos on YouTube, man, and dude, you're doing some out there stuff. Tell me about what you thought when you saw the scene, those guys, and your entry into it.
Yeah, it was funny because I feel like I could just relate more with freestyle motocross because, you know, to me, Jeremy McGrath was a god. I was never getting nowhere near that guy, but watching Deegan, you know, out riding right behind his house there, I'm like, I could go ride this spot and, you know, kind of hang out with Deegan and like be that guy. And, you know, the Metal Militia came out and we were all super fans up here. Cause like I said, we were so far out of the scene that to us, it was just so awesome. Everything they were doing. I mean, dude, we were buying Militia and Moto XXX windbreakers and going out and riding when it was raining. And, you know, cause you know, racing, say an AMA card's $400, an entry's $200. You're $600-$700 out before you even go to the gate, and you're not even guaranteed to qualify to make money, you know? So I was doing that for a while, and all of a sudden I got invited to a freestyle demo. I rode for maybe 20 minutes in front of 40 people and got a $1,500 check. I mean, I had to pay my gas there, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then went to a contest series, got fifth place, got $2,500 for the weekend, and I'm like, so I'm not paying to have to sign up for these things, and I'm making this money, you know? And like I said, you're the one guy out there, so if you start doing a trick, the backflip or whatever, and you're standing out, it's just going to start snowballing. And that's exactly what it did.
One of your quotes was you said freestyle riding was a bunch of punks.
Yeah.
How so did you mean that?
Well, I was still trying to be
more like punk rockish.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not punks at all. I mean, like I said, I was in love with the sport from the get go. Like Metzger and Deegan were my idols, you know, and even Pastrana, who was the clean cut racer, he was doing crazy stuff. So they were more raw, you know, and it was more, because McGrath had to put on, you know, like I said, he'd have purple hair and earrings, but when he would do his press conference, he would just speak like a gentleman, you know, like real polite with the racers, everything. But I know how Jeremy would want it to be, you know, and Deegan was like that guy that I wanted to see. You know, it's just like stuff now today. You don't want to see the guy at the press conference, yeah, the race was good, this and that. You know, you want to see the guy that's like, that guy took me out, you know, next race. Like, I want to hear what they're thinking. I'm sick of like just the robotic, you know, like over and over stuff. And that's where freestyle motocross really changed the sport.
According to ZipRecruiter research, nearly 3 out of 4 employers say they're finding it difficult to fill open positions. 68% of employers have raised their wages. 23% have increased their benefits. If you have a difficult role to fill, no matter what your industry, hire with ZipRecruiter. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter find a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/STEVE. ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Well, it's been interesting to watch some of Brian Deegan's early interviews, going to the interviews that he does now, the very successful YouTube channel, and he's in the podcast now. He's a smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
Smart businessman. Yep. You know, he played the part back then, but as you get farther in the trenches or shift or transition into something that's a little bit more mainstream, his daughter, Haley Deegan, being 18 years old and trying to push it in the NASCAR circuit, speaks more like a businessman, but he's always had that acumen.
Yeah.
So he was always kind of leading a charge, but with some attitude. And
yeah.
Now he's still got that attitude, but it's from a thinking man's perspective.
Yeah, and he was one of the smartest guys in our sport, overall racing, freestyle, whatever. He was always a step ahead of everything, with the militia and moving into stuff. And even with his competing, he had the 360 when Travis had it. Everyone was hyping up Travis at X Games for three, and Deegan came out right before him and did it. So he's always been a step ahead. He's always pushed his sport. And, it was funny because I was afraid of him because I just saw the videos, being up here watching VHS, and I did date myself right there. But, I'm like, dude, Deegan's so scary. And then, one of the first contests where I ever actually ran into him, he was, super nice guy, cool, shot the shit with him for a little bit. And I'm like, all right, this is cool. I'm not going to blow his cover. I know what he's doing. But,
yeah,
I mean, you got to be thankful for a guy like Brian to promote our sport the way he did.
Well, he came down from Nebraska. He wanted to get into, riding dirt bikes. He's already been riding dirt bikes. He wanted to get into racing. He came out to Cali because he knew that's where it was, just like you just said. So that was his plan. When you started this, now you're kind of somewhat retired, removed from the scene. So what were your thoughts trying to get into the sport, and were you planning long term? I come from the world of pro wrestling. All I wanted to be was a pro wrestler. It worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
And then a crash landed, and then not too far later, it was done.
Yeah.
It was over. I had to retire at 38. You're right there.
Yeah.
So, what was your plan going in?
It's funny because I try and think about it all the time, and I can't honestly tell you I had a plan. It was, like I said, I went to Cliffy with, $1,500 in my account, and the first race was in Iowa. And I'm like, let's go here. Let's win a couple jump offs. Let's see if we can do this thing. And that takes off. And then I'm like, I'm going to try some freestyle stuff. Let's try that, and then that takes off. And then next thing I know, I'm in X Games, and I want one medal. And I get a medal my first X Games, and I'm just like, it was really like a blur how fast everything happened. It wasn't like I had this strategic, okay, this year I'm doing this, next year this. It was like I went from riding a freestyle show in, let's say Des Moines, Iowa, to all of a sudden I'm flying to Germany, I'm flying to Australia. And, I mean, we were doing almost 50 shows a year. There was an eight-year period there where I was gone every single weekend. And I loved it. I mean, I was just trying to take it all in. And, and then like you said, last year was my last tour with Nitro Circus, and I got done with my last show, and I'm like, I can still remember riding my first show 21 years ago. It's crazy. It was like someone snapped their fingers and I was done, but I knew it was time to hang it up and kind of get on with that second part of my life, I guess.
Okay, but what was the scene back then? Because when I'm watching some of the Metal Militia guys, man, it was pretty wild. Lee Kogel got pretty far out there. Deegan would party a little bit.
Yeah.
More on the alcohol side. I'm not trying to talk about Brian with him not being here.
Yeah.
I just got finished having a conversation with him. And that lifestyle, in the lifestyle I came from, you can live pretty damn fast if you want to.
Yeah.
Did you get caught up in that grind?
On the alcohol side of it, for sure. It wasn't, I don't think, anything out of control. It never, hindered my job of what I was trying to do. I always had my goals that I wanted to do when I got to the event. But, I mean, we were flying to Australia, and you'd ride Friday, Saturday night, and Australian after parties were crazy. I mean, there was just pictures of Jack and Cokes floating around. And then you have, Sunday through Thursday off, and we're on the Gold Coast. We're out there, bar hopping and stuff. And, it definitely, I think in that aspect, took a toll on me. I mean, there was a lot of hotel bars the night before, just demos and stuff like X Games. I was 2 months removed from any of that stuff, just taking it real serious. But when you were doing, fun shows and stuff, man, it was hard not to have a good time. And honestly, like you probably know too, sometimes you are cooped up in a hotel for a week and, you can only explore so much. I mean, after my eighth time in Australia, I'm not trying to go over there and sightsee. So right. It's like, I'm going to go find this bar, have some beers. And then next thing you know, you're 18 beers deep. It's 6 a.m. You're hanging out, still telling stories about the good old days.
Yeah. But when you live in a high octane, lifestyle, no pun intended. And, there's with all the adrenaline and testosterone that goes into that, a bunch of damn young guys, damn near, damn near crazy.
Yeah.
To do some of the stuff that you guys do. I mean, one thing leads to another. You know,
yeah.
It's 18 beers later.
And it's easy to do. It's you said, that's, I've always wondered, because even now when I'm done riding, it's like 11 o'clock comes around PM and I feel like I'm wide awake and I'm like, why is this? But it's exactly what you said. Our shows were 7 to 10 o'clock, and then you get done and you're all amped up from the show and the riding, or if it's X Games, you did well and you go out and have beers. Next thing you know, it's 4 in the morning and you're tucking it in. And it's like, you know, I did that for 21 years. So now it's like all of a sudden I'm trying to kind of like live this more normal life. And I'm like, I'm still like juiced up here. I can't settle down.
Hey man, Cliff, were you traveling with him when he went on all these things? Because you came in and you know, it was funny because in listening to some of your interviews, Mike, you were saying, hey man, you know, you know a lot about bikes, but when Cliff started working on your bike, every time you got back on it, it seemed like it rode better.
Yeah.
So tell me about the bike whispering aspect that you seem to have, and where you guys together on all this, and where you got your background and your start in. I just asked you 10 questions. Take as much time as you need to answer them.
I'm good
about rambling on and on and on. How'd you get started and turn out to be such a badass mechanic?
Well, just started, like Mike said, in the early days here. We all grew up, went to middle school together, and we all rode together after school every day. And we all started racing. They started racing before me, but then I got into it, and I had a couple big injuries real early. And I always loved the sport, and I wanted to stay involved. So for whatever reason, I was always the go-to guy. Like, before I became an official, you know, mechanic for anything, I was always kind of the guy they're rolling bikes over to, hey, man, I need to tighten my chain or whatever. And I could, you know, I just kind of had a knack for figuring it out. So we all rode together. And then, like I said, I had a couple big injuries, a couple big get-offs real early, helicopter rides, stuff like that. And I was like, man, I don't think I'm cut out to make it anywhere as a racer, you know, not even, you know, on a bigger amateur level. So I just started wrenching and got,
hey, before you get into the wrenching, tell me about some of these crashes. Cause Deegan almost lost his life when, you know, he blew a kidney out, or a big vein off his kidney, lost a kidney, spleen, some stuff like that.
Yeah. He had some big ones.
Yeah. We should definitely get into detail.
So what kind of injuries you sustaining here? Because man, when I see you guys way up in the air and I'm thinking, you know, I did what I did back in the day. I went from being immortal, now I'm mortal again. So take me through some of this stuff.
So half of my problem was I was always over my head because I rode with these guys that are a little bit more experienced at the time, even though we were young, and, you know, try to do the same jumps, or they'd tell me how to do it, and I got myself in trouble. So first big one, well, I broke a wrist, and we were in school. It's kind of funny. I broke my wrist, but I milked it, and I ended up, I missed 2 weeks of school, but it wasn't even my riding hand, but I told them it was. So I got to miss 2 weeks of school and stayed home and laughed at all these guys. They had to go to school. So that was just, you know, baby one, everyone goes through that. And then at a Golden State series that actually, Mike's parents took me to, I broke my tib and fib, and that was a good one. Again, got to miss a bunch of school was the only cool thing.
What, coming down, miss a peg, hit the ground?
Or yeah, just there was a tabletop, and it was a real foggy morning, and it was right. I was like first practice to go out and just kind of hit a hidden hole, kind of swapped, high-sided, went right down, tib and fib, gone, right? So Mike's mom has to miss the whole race. She brings me back. We were a couple hundred miles away over the hill in Sacramento, in Marysville, and she brought me back to Reno where my mom was, blah blah blah. So the one that put me over the edge is I broke my femur, and we were out here practicing one day, and
are like back to back.
Yeah, those I'd get back on and get hurt.
Yeah.
So broke my femur just kind of going up a hill, swapped out, went off the track, hit a hidden rock, broke my femur. These guys circled back around. I was not in good shape. Ended up clipping the femoral artery.
Oh, dude.
So my leg blew up, you know, and you can die from that.
Damn right. Bleed out, quit.
Yeah. So I got a helicopter ride, you know, and that's when, you know, with my mom, we're like, yeah, we got to rethink this thing. I still want to ride, still want to have a bike, but man, I don't need to be pushing it, like trying to keep up with these dudes or whatever. So that's when the wrenching came in. Wanted to stay a part of the sport and got pretty lucky. You know, a few years later after that, Mason was doing pretty good as a local pro and kind of wanted to go to the next level and hit the Arena Cross series and do the whole national series, you know, with the factory teams and all that involved. And he came to me with a you know, a small, small offer. And I'm like, dude, I'm 18, got nothing to lose, got no other, nothing else going on.
Working construction.
Yeah, working construction at the time. And we went. And like he said, man, it was a struggle. We got two bikes together with help of a couple local sponsors. And we got in a Ford Econoline cargo van with two bikes. And me and him, 18 years old, hit the road, made enough money at the first one, you know, went from Iowa. Oh, man, this is cool. We got enough money. We can go to New York. We go to New York. We had, like he said, we had no plan. We were going to come home when it was done. And 2 years later, we did the whole series. He got more sponsors, and I was getting better as a mechanic. You know, you got to be out there to learn, you know, and I'm working around all these other guys. And the series, the guys on the bigger teams kind of took a liking to us because we were just two young kids on our own. There's no one around. Mm-hmm. It was just us. We just showed up out of nowhere. So I'm getting all help from, you know, if we need some parts, I could go into the Honda trailer and grab parts. They're like, oh, it's for Mason and Cliff. Dude, we're good. Take it, you know, anything. So they helped us keep going. And then shortly after that is when the freestyle thing hit. And I hung on with him, you know, and I did some racing after that, got a job on a supercross team. And he went out and, you know, started doing freestyle. And I always prepped his bikes, no matter, you know, who I was working for here and there. Always maintained his stuff.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
What do companies like Ring, Hint, and Tecovas all have in common? They all use NetSuite to accelerate their growth. Successful companies know that in order to grow faster, you must have the right tools. If you want to take your company from $2 million to $10 million or $10 million to hundreds of millions in revenue, NetSuite by Oracle gives you the tools to turbocharge your growth. With NetSuite, you get a full picture of your business, finance, inventory, HR, customers, and more. It's everything you need to grow all in one place. Run your entire business from anywhere, even if you're working from home. With NetSuite, you're covered. NetSuite will give you visibility and control you need to make the right decisions and grow with confidence. That's why NetSuite customers grow faster than the S&P 500. NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system, trusted by more than 20,000 companies. It's the last system you'll ever need. NetSuite, business grows here. Schedule your free product tour right now and receive your free guide, 6 ways to run a more profitable business, at netsuite.com/Steve. That's netsuite.com/Steve. netsuite.com/Steve.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
I got a question for you, but the question first is, how was living for 2 years in a van? Because I know a couple times y'all might have been some hotels, but I know a couple times y'all sleeping in that van.
Oh, for sure.
Break that down for me. How about that lifestyle?
Yeah, it was tough, and it was a small van. I mean, the sleeper was one person, so it's like he would drive, I would sleep, and then he would drive, and I'd keep sleeping. I actually slept a lot, but, you know, the cool thing, yeah, oh, I don't know what was going on in my late teens, but I was tired. Like, I'm way different now. Like, now when we do road trips, I could drive damn near the whole thing, but... You know, the cool thing with Arena Cross, like he was saying, it was such a small community. We ended up making friends with someone in Texas, and we got to stay at his house. His mom was making us breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, and just out of like being nice, you know, it wasn't like we were begging for it or nothing, but they had a practice track. So we kind of based in Texas when the rounds were around there. And then, you know, we had a buddy up in Illinois. We'd base out of there, and we actually got to sleep on quite a few floors, but there was a couple nights, like snowy nights, we were both in the van. He had a chain up in Nebraska one night at like 2 a.m. after
he
we got
slept
from
through
Switzerland.
It.
I slept through it, and I mean, it was rough, but you know, when you're, like he said, when you're 18 years old, you have nothing to lose. It wasn't like we were living rough. I mean, I had a new van thanks to my grandma who signed on the loan for me, and we just did it, you know, and it was a lot of fun. It was an experience that I think I wish more riders would go through, because there's a lot of kids that get their stuff right away. They have no clue what's going on. You know, they're just like, oh, the motorhome's normal. Motorhome, three bikes. You know, my dad's already got a mechanic. I'm 10 years old, but we didn't have that. We grew up, like my first supercross race, I went to an 84 Toyota pickup. You know, faded paint, everything. So I think it's an experience that, you know, made us close together and and we stuck through it, and yeah, we're here.
But that grind is fun, man.
It is.
Especially when you're bulletproof, when you, like you guys, 18, 20 years old, and you're out down the road, man, just trying to get by and survive, sandwiches, and, you know, old guys helping you out with some parts and some learning, stuff like that. It's paying dues.
Yeah.
I mean, it sure makes you appreciate everything, dude, a lot more than just having a bunch of stuff handed to you.
Tell them about the hot dog.
Oh, man.
Since he said sandwiches.
Well, yeah. When, you know, road life, you don't care. And you lose track of time. He's back there sleeping. We're just trying to get to the next race. And it was probably
6 a.m., dude.
Yeah, 6 a.m. But, you know, these places stay open 24 hours, and I don't know what time it is. I know I'm hungry, right? So I pull over at a Dairy Queen, right? And we got this joke now. It's all about the extra long Coney dog. So he wakes up, and I'm just going to town on an extra long. I was hungry.
Dude, the thing was like a foot long. I was sleeping and it stunk the van up so bad. 6 a.m., he is just mopping up this long hot dog. I'm like, that is disgusting, dude.
Hey, man.
But it was 99
cents. Do what you got to do out on the road. Yeah, we were on
stuck to the budget.
We're on the dollar food budget, privateer life.
Where would y'all get most of your meals? Just fast food stuff, roll through?
Yeah, and, you know, we try to do good, like hit a grocery store, stock a cooler, especially like once we got into town race weekend. You know, get some decent sandwich stuff.
That's pretty upscale.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, we were trying to be grown-ups. We really weren't, but, I mean, we figured it out as we went, and I think that's like when we got to the next level, you know, jumping forward a little bit. You know, I got a job working for Tony Hawk on his Action Sports Tour, and me coming from an Econoline van 2 years before, now I'm in a Prevost flying on Tony's jet, and I'm like, damn. Like Mike was saying earlier, I was like, this happened so fast. What the heck? You know?
What were you doing for Tony Hawk? Because, I mean, I know him from skateboarding. What was he doing that you were doing for him? Was he in a motocross too?
Yeah, so Tony, back in 2002, I don't know if you got talked to Brian about it on your last podcast with him, but Tony started a Action Sports Tour. It was called the Boom Boom Huck Jam.
Right.
And it was an arena tour, first one of its kind, and he went all out. He spent a lot of money, of his own money, building the ramp systems and stuff like that. And they did freestyle motocross on it. And through a mutual friend that we had met racing, he was kind of heading up the moto part of it. And they called me to take care and prep the bikes for it. And it was 3 years of the tour. We had a couple different riders cycle out, but it's where I met Kerry Hart. It ended up late in the later years working for him. Mike's a business partner with him now. And Brian Deegan, we had one of the old school guys, Clifford Adaptante. And we just had a couple dudes cycle out, but I did all 3 years of his tour. And from everyone, from athletes to the rigging guys, whatever, he took care of you. Like I said, I'm a dirt bike mechanic, and I'm on a Prevost and in a private jet.
And that's a pretty sweet gig.
It was. I got lucky. You know, it was, you know, like you were saying earlier with timing. You know, we hit it when the getting was good, and it's tough to find tours like that anymore. But it was definitely one of the cooler experiences in my career.
Man, I've never met Tony Hawk, but to see everything that guy's accomplished, that's another guy that seems like just a premier businessman and a forward thinker, because, man, he's taken, you know, everything that he's taken to a hell of a – dude, with all the video games and everything that he's got and everything that he's accomplished, he's doing absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, he's really smart. I got to know Tony, you know, we rode the bus together and stuff like that, but he's a real savvy businessman, and seems like, you know, like your Deegans and – your Hart, Kerry Harts and stuff. There's a lot of guys that got sharp, you know, with their business skills, with marketing and everything, coming through the Action Sports world, you know, because it was before the days of everyone having big agents and stuff, and you're trying to figure out how to build your own brand. And like Deegan's one of the better ones at, you know, building his own brands. And they just kind of through those experiences of Action Sports, they seem to adapt and can do really well.
Yeah, but, you know, it's also, I mean, everything, yeah, to your point, but, man, it's survival, and it's making relationships, and it's networking, and, you know, putting all the pieces together to keep the machine going forward.
Yeah, you know? And it's just like probably, you know, in your industry, in our industry, there's always the pioneers of the sport, you know. Deegan came in. It's not like freestyle motocross has been around for 20 years and Deegan comes in and does it. He was one of the founding guys. Tony Hawk pretty much put, like, mainstream skateboarding on the map. You know, you got BMX, like the Dave Mirras. There's always like one of those guys or two of those guys that really are the foundation of our sport. You know, I mean, Mike Metzger was one of the founding fathers of our sport, and he kind of wasn't the business guy that he thought he was, you know, so you could see the difference between him and Deegan. and, you know, Travis and Deegan, what they've done, and they're still around, you know, almost 30 years later. So it's just that thing, like the back to the timing thing. It's just being in the right spot, taking advantage of it. Like you said, make the connections, try not to burn any bridges and hang on to it.
But what's the difference between if you're going to set up a bike cliff, like what's the difference if you're trying to prep his bike for a motocross race, supercross, whatever you want to call it, or it's just going to be freestyle? I don't mean just, but it's two kind of different things as far as performance of the bike, right? I mean, you don't need that thing hopped up like crazy.
No, and
what's the setup?
It's a different animal for sure. You know, you can get away with a lot more kind of on the freestyle setup kind of thing. It's more tailored to how, you know, they like it, where their grabs are, because they're jumping off this thing and they're wanting to grab. So that stuff has to be set up. A lot of attention to detail, but we don't have to, you know, port engines and do motor work. There's the modern day dirt bike, you know, as you've ridden, they're really good, you know. But the biggest difference with like the racing thing and the freestyle thing, it's kind of why we were all able to have more fun with freestyle. Like I'm not tearing down bikes to the frame after every event and putting them back together with a freestyle thing. You know, we got a main suspension setting, we got, you know, some jetting and some engine work dialed in just enough, and you make sure everything's tight, send them out. And it's still nerve-wracking on my side, you know, because with Mace especially, it's like those are your buddies out there, you know, with him, your best friend out there, and it's all my work. You know, I've had the nightmares like front wheels falling off in the air, shit like that. So it gets kind of hectic. But the back to your question, like the racing side is, you know, they're always looking for the edge, you know, they're always working hard. They got engineers on it, and it's, you know, it's racing just like anything. Freestyle thing, it's not so much. There's a couple key components you got to dial in, but nothing like the racing world. And yeah, I was fortunate enough to do both. So I know the difference of it, but I could definitely say I was having a lot more fun. Yeah.
Touched dirt anymore, so you didn't even have to wash them.
Yeah. That's really good.
I was watching some of your practice videos, Mike, mm-hmm. and Hillis compound not too far from here, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And there's some ramps out there, and there's some dirt that you guys are landing on. And, man, I mean, I can't even describe the tricks that you guys are doing. Like, dude, what possesses you just when you was younger to do all that stuff?
Yeah,
you know,
I was
pretty damn crazy when I was a kid, but, you know. I didn't see myself doing anything like what you guys are doing on those motorcycles when I was riding my little KE100.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird for me too. Like, coming from racing, I didn't see myself backflipping ever. And when the backflip came out, I'm like, there's no way in hell I'll ever do that, because I was still, you know, fully involved in racing. But it's one of those things, you know, like you said, we had a compound out here. Fortunate enough, our buddy Dustin Miller was already in freestyle, built us a foam pit. You know, he had 7 acres of just all freestyle stuff. And you know, what happens is there was 7 or 8 of us pursuing freestyle at the time. So it was like a real job. 9 o'clock Monday morning, we were all on our bikes out there, but not to push each other. We were just having fun. Like, oh, dude, look, I'm starting to get this or this. You know, you baby step everything. Like what you saw in the videos, that's years and years of practice, you know.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no. And I was always more on the cautious side. So I was like a real slow learner. Like, I'd start to get a trick, and then it would take me a couple years to where I was just like, okay, this is perfect, you know. But then we had foam pits. Once the foam pit came out, we all had to start backflipping into it. And that was probably the scariest time of my career ever. Like, I can still remember it. You know, we had to turn our gas off. It was 2 strokes. So I'd remember like blowing out my bike a couple times, and I would turn my gas off, and I'm like, well, I'm committed now, you know. And it was only 45 feet at the time, so the ramp was basically pushed into the foam pit. But still, when you take off and you flip and you look back and spot the pit, dude, it looks like you're 60 feet in the air. You're not, but it's just the visual of it, you know, and it just dropped your stomach. And did that for 6 or 7 months, and then everyone started flipping 75 feet. So now you're second gear, you know, going pretty fast, and you're coming to a dead stop in this foam pit. If you jump off the bike or anything happens, it's not fun, you know? So, and then you got to take it to dirt. I mean, you can jump in the foam pit for all you want, but at some point you got to go to dirt. And, you know, luckily in my time, the straight backflip, the one-handed backflip, the no-footed backflip, you were getting top 3, top 5 at big contests. So I'm like, man, I got to do this. And I remember, you know, the one time I came out of the turn and didn't know if I was going to flip. I was committed, but I just didn't know. I just turned and kind of got like that blackout, and I was going up the ramp, and next thing I knew, I was going off the ramp and pulling, and I'm like, oh my God, like, because I wasn't in the zone. You know, like now when I flip, I'm going off the ramp. I can see the top of the ramp perfect. flip, you know, lean back, whatever. But that time I just remember like having like an out of body experience, came around a little over rotate and landed. And I like looked back. I'm like, dude, I really just do that. And then I'm like, yes, that was awesome, badass, whatever. And then I'm like, I have to do this all the time now at different venues, different ramps, ramp to ramp on cement. And I'm like, dude, I had sleepless nights for a year probably, you know, until you were just like really like it was ingrained, like another one of your tricks basically, you know, because like I said, flipping at your house is fine. But the first time I ever flipped like a mobile setup on cement, I'm like, dude, what if I like just gas it too hard and miss the whole landing or something? And it wasn't fun, but you know, I'm glad I stuck through it and kind of showed some mental toughness, I guess you would say, because it took every day of my life for a year to just really where I just never thought about it anymore.
Then he thinks it's funny to make his mechanic start backflipping into the foam pit on a mini bike.
Hey, we all had to do it.
It was like the rule. If you're going to go hang out at the compound, you got to get on a mini bike and backflip before you can hang out.
Yep. Cliffy had to backflip. Our buddy that does our video had to backflip. A dude that came over to work on Miller's house had to do a backflip. And it was like he said, it was just kind of the rule. But, you know, I'm stoked that all these guys got to do it because now they can kind of understand. I mean, at one point, I think I flipped 135-foot dirt jump. So, you know, like they can kind of understand what we're going through now, like the first time you're lining something like that up. So it's pretty cool.
You want to spend less time working on your lawn and more time sitting on your lawn with an ice cold one? Well, here you go. Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action kills weeds, prevents crabgrass, and feeds to build thick green lawns. With Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action, you can finally get the lawn you've always dreamt of. When you feed with Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action multiple times throughout the year, your grass will be greener, stronger, and more resilient. Scott's Turf Builder Triple Action will give your yard the nourishment it needs to help your weak, thin lawn recover. Also, Scott's No Quibble Money Back Guarantee states, if you're not satisfied, you get your money back. Simple as that. Slam down a bag today. This is the Scott's Yard. Dude, when you get as good as you are or were in your prime, however you want to say that, because I know you're doing less than what you were when you were younger. Dude, what was the limit? I mean, what would happen if you just flat out missed and just over rotated or under rotated to just fucking crashed?
I did. I had a bad one actually, and you know, like I said, 05-06 was awesome because it was just basic tricks. It was like the 1990s right side up tricks. We were doing upside down and getting thirds and fifths. We're celebrating at after parties. Well, this is sick. And then all of a sudden it was like, it went to that next level of, you know, like double grab backflips and all this crazy stuff where, you know, you got to start thinking about rotation, bars turning, missing your grabs, whatever, you know, and then double backflips and front flips. And we're like, maybe we'll just stay at the after party. I don't think this is that fun no more, but actually in Australia, I was really trying to still push in the contest scene. I didn't want to just be the demo show guy at this point, you know? And we were in Australia and our setup got set up late. So we had 15 minutes of practice. And in that show, I had to do a seat grab backflip, which is where you grab the seat and kind of push out like handstand type, you know? And I used the first 5-10 minutes just to get warmed up. And I'm like, I got to do a couple of these because in the show I'm sitting in the tunnel. They point me to go and I got to do it on call. I don't get to go out and straight jump for a couple times or whatever. And sure enough, I do one flip, get my grab, just kind of take my feet off a little bit. I'm like, okay, I got it. Next flip, do my grab, push my bike out, and my hand slipped out of my grab. So now my hand's on my throttle, my bike's flipping over my head, the throttle's wide open because, you know, my hand's twisting it. And it was just that, like, slow motion thought. I let go of the bike. I'm just staring at just the landing by myself, rolling down the windows. Our rule of thumb is to, when you hit the ground, roll out of it. Don't ever try and straight leg the ground, you know, because that's tib and fib material there. So I just remember that, hit the ground, roll out of it, bike grenades me, and I'm sitting there and my whole body hurts. I'm like, I didn't break nothing, but I ended up, well, actually, yeah, I broke my kneecap, dislocated my left ankle, partial dislocation of my right wrist, tore my hamstring somehow.
Concussion.
Cause he had to follow me to the tunnel. I was taking off all my gear. I was in my underwear by the time I got to the locker room. Cause you know, when something hurts so bad, you just can't get comfortable.
So Mike has this weird thing since he sold me out on the 6 a.m. chili dog story. He's got this weird thing when he crashes, has a good one, kind of, you know, coming to, he's kind of in shock. You know, every crash kind of shocks you. Dude, like, he just gets naked.
Mm-hmm.
He got
on the court, like, on the floor.
Yeah, like, we're in the middle of arena, and then You know, first thing comes the goggles. Next comes the helmet. Then he's pulling his jersey off. You know, now he's got no shirt on. We're walking down through the center of the arena floor, and here comes the pants. Pants are coming off. And then he's caught up, and then he takes his boots off right there. I'm like, dude, are you okay?
Yeah, he's like the maid behind me gathering up all my articles of clothing.
It's happened a few times where he's like, yeah. It's like clockwork. I'm like, uh-oh, he went down. Okay.
Get the laundry basket.
It's like Ricky Bobby when he thinks he's on fire. He just has to get naked, yeah. Right? In the middle of the arena, man. Yeah.
And it's a comfort thing. Like everything hurts. I can't figure it out. So I just start taking stuff off. But that was the bad one because I took everything off and I looked and my knee was just like a balloon and my whole back of my leg was already bruised. I had a lump on my wrist and my ankle. And I'm like, oh. Dude, and I laid in that locker room for probably 5 hours. Just in my underwear because I couldn't move, you know, because like I said, it was the left side and the right side and my head. And that was pretty much the last, that was 2010. And that was pretty much the last time I pushed freestyle motocross as hard as I did. Luckily, Speed and Style came out, which was like a racing and freestyle event at X Games. So that kind of extended my career. But yeah, 2010 was where that crash kind of took it all out of me.
Dude, what happens if you go, I don't know, what is it, Superman or whatever, mm-hmm. you, everything goes out forward and you let go of the bike and then that grab. Dude, what if you miss that grab? I mean, you just pancake?
Yeah, yeah.
And your bike goes that way?
Yeah, how's that? Luckily enough, I never did it. Like, I had that trick pretty dialed. Yeah. But one of our friends did it, and it was an 85-foot jump. Our standard's 75 feet for, like, you know, demos or whatever. But this was a big course, big contest, and it was, like, an 85-foot jump. And he did it and went to grab, and the bike was below him. So he just pretty much hugged himself in the air. And ended up breaking his femur because it was disgusting. He, like you said, he hit pancaked and he's rolling out of it and his leg's going opposite of where he's rolling because his femur's broke, you know? And I mean, dude, I thought about that all because there was times, you know, like on a Nitro Circus show where there's a wind delay, then it's raining and then it's windy in the show, but we got to get a show off. You know, you got to get like 75% of the show off to call it a show. And there'd be times where I had to do that trick in the show and I'd jump off and let go of my bike. And literally I could, cause I always have like a little visual on my seat. I'm always looking forward, but I can kind of see, and I can just feel my bike kind of like leaning out from under me and I'll catch it and land sideways. And that's the stuff I'm not going to miss when I'm done, you know, like the perfect show, the perfect jump, everything, that's fine. But you know, the elements and just the like fear of that kind of, I was over.
But what are y'all doing as far as the grabs? Is there a hole back here? Y'all just grabbing the side of the frame?
Yeah. We cut the seat down so you can get your hand over it, and then we'll fab the subframe back there up to where you could grab the whole thing with one hand. So it's a, you know, there's some modification, some fabrication involved to make those grabs pretty much tailored for each guy. Some dudes like them a little bit further forward. Some guys like them really thin. Some guys like a little bit more seat under it. But yeah, we cut them out, do what we have to do to make it comfortable for them to not miss the grab.
When you first started riding, and what were you riding back then? I think he started off on a CR50 Honda.
Suzuki 50, Suzuki little JR50, 50. Yep.
Okay, so what are you riding now?
Now I got a Honda 450. I kind of was a Suzuki guy my whole career. Rode Cowies for 1 year through a friend of mine, gave me a bike at a good deal, you know, like we were always kind of hurting for money, so that helped. And then my first big like bike sponsor was Big Valley Honda up in Reno, Lane Colbert. They hooked us up with some bikes, so... Pretty much my whole professional career, I stayed on Hondas. I did Suzuki for a couple years through Hart and Huntington. But yeah, Hondas have always, I like the way they look. You know, Cliffy builds them awesome. The red and black, I think, suits me. And I just really like the geometry, I guess you could say, of a Honda. Like, I took 3 years off when I was on Suzuki's, and then he built me a Honda last year, and I hopped on it, and it was like I never got off it. You know, I just felt comfy, the bar height, the seat height, everything.
What were you riding, Cliff?
I had Kawasaki's like through minis and then right into the big bikes. And then the femur machine was a YZ250. I had a few different bikes as far as like Mike could ride anything. It's like who we were getting the support from, you know, and Honda, like you said, Lane up at Big Valley Honda always helped us out the most. So kind of stayed on Hondas the longest, but he went through all the brands. 1 year we switched to Yamahas because Yamaha was the last one left building new two strokes. So one of the, you know, years of freestyle before he switched to the four stroke, we tried out YZs, some Yamahas after being on Honda two strokes for so long, and he did not get along with that bike. Just that's the one he was explaining the big crash in Australia. For whatever reason, man, a lot of dudes ride them. He didn't get along with that Yamaha.
Hated it.
Dude, I had a YZ490. It was a couple years old when I bought it. It was brand new, still in a crate, but I got a good deal on it just because it was a couple years old. No one had bought it, put it together for me. Man, nasty-ass two-stroke. And, man, I forgot how mean that bike was. I'd been on the road for about 3 weeks. And of course, you know, first thing you do when you get home, you got to get back on your bike. And, man, I was at a ride without a helmet. I had 10 acres out of log cabin. Third gear hit, man, that band kicked in. And all of a sudden, man, I just remember sliding across my front yard, peeled off the clutch lever, bent my shifter off, and I just come to a screeching halt. And luckily, I wasn't hurt. And the next day, I went to the motorcycle shop, got a shift lever, got a clutch lever, replaced it, put the bike for sale. And it was like my wife at the time said, man, why are you selling your motorcycle? I said, well, shit, I get beat up for a living. I said, I don't need this thing to beat the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But that bike, that red and white, white and red back in, it was a badass bike, but that submission was mean.
Yeah.
It spit me out like a piece of shit. I was going to ask you, I saw you training for, I don't know if it's while you were still competing, you were running down a dirt road with your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Now, back in the day, you know, none of these guys were training for nothing. It was just kind of like party and ride, and you got good riding because you rode so much.
Yeah.
Tell me about what you're doing with your training.
Yeah, so that was the X Games speed and style event that we were talking about where, you know, I mean, I didn't need to train for it. It was four laps in an arena with, you know, a couple jumps. And
I like that format. I've never seen that until I watched it on YouTube.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for me because coming from a racing background. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, this was towards like the third quarter of my career here. So it was kind of a fun thing for me to do, go out and race again and do some tricks as well. But I had a bad year in 2008 was when they first debuted it. And I'm like, oh, dude, I'll have the track covered. You know, I can do a couple flips. I'll probably get top three easy, maybe win the thing. Dude, and I crashed so hard because I wasn't invested into it. You know, I mean, it wasn't necessarily that I was tired, but I just kind of took it for granted. And then that was at a one-off event in San Diego called the Navy Games or Navy X Games or something. And then 5 months later is the Home Depot Center X Games. They have it again. And there's really no, I had Pastrana in my first heat, but other than that, it was kind of just a bunch of freestyle guys. And I'm like, okay, I'll cut a couple laps. Me and Cliffy went and did a little testing in Vegas at Hart's Track. And I'm like, okay, now I'm prepared. Dude, crashed again, got like sixth place. And the guy that won it was a racer that didn't even flip. You know, he went out there, he did like a whip and like a knack-knack and won a damn gold medal at X Games. And I was like, okay, that's enough of this. So it kind of took a break for a bit, speed and style did. And in 2011, it came back and I got invited to it. And I'm like, dude, I told him, I'm not doing that again. I don't care if I overtrain for this thing or whatever. And that's when I started hammering out laps on the track. Not so much the freestyle stuff because it was second nature to me at this point. But yeah, road biking, running, mountain biking, you know, just eating good. Like I said, 2 months clean, sober, everything. Because if I crashed again, at least I knew I took it serious, you know. And I was one of the only guys on a two-stroke, and I actually won the final against Nate Adams, but he beat me in the freestyle part of it. I didn't beat him by enough on the track. I had to beat him by like 4 seconds on the track. So I was like, okay, that's a good recipe. And 2012, same thing. Busted our asses. You know, Cliff was out there with me every day at the track. That was where I was running. It was actually with Cliffy's dog. We were just out here and I was, you know, I would go ride all morning. And then when Cliff was washing my bike, I'd go out and jog this trail. Got my first gold medal that year. So we like finally started to understand, you know, even if it's overtraining and it's overkill, it's working. And the next year, two more golds. The year after that, another gold and then a bronze. And, you know, it just became like a habit, a routine. It was like every April or May, I was just shutting my schedule off, you know, kind of like what you were saying earlier about when you have a show coming up or something. You give yourself that time to just, you know, flush the body. And I think it did more for my mind than anything. Because after crashing a couple times, you know, you start to doubt yourself. So, yeah, I put in the work.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com. In 2012, you thought you had 2 years left.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought that in probably 2007.
Yeah.
Ask Cliffy. Every year, I'm like, yeah, this might be the last year. I think
that was every year. I'm like, okay, what are we doing now? But he figured it out.
Yeah.
So, like, how busy do you stay? Are you still doing, like, demos and stuff? Like, what do you do now?
I retired actually last year. I rode Nitro Circus Tour one more time. We did 12 shows in the States, a couple Spain shows, and I just mentally was checked out. You know, I mean, I've been riding for 21 years. For the most part, like, our jumps are the exact same. You know, so after 20 years of doing the same jump, like I said, I wasn't progressing myself. So it's like, I'm not going out trying to learn something every day. And it started getting to a point the last 3 years, I was taking, you know, like my last show would be in October and my first show would be in April. And I would touch my bike in March for like a week and then go on tour. And I just didn't like that feeling no more, you know, and I had done all I wanted to do. You know, I had accomplished everything I wanted to, and I just felt it was the right time to step away, you know, and kind of started moving into the broadcasting stuff with X Games. So now I do the TV stuff for them for all the freestyle motocross and, you know, working with the PGA Tour a little bit, because I love, like, golf is like my new addiction now that I'm kind of out of the moto scene, you know, just trying to replace that competitive nature basically. And just it was time to move on. You know, I was taking spots in shows where the other kids earned it, you know, they deserved it, and I was just kind of out there, you know, half-assing the shows and stuff, and I just didn't like that feeling, so it was time to step away.
So what are you doing with the golf game? I saw on your Instagram account. What's your Instagram account?
Instagram is Mike_Mason81, and I'm hitting a lot of houses with my golf game so far. I haven't quite figured out how to hit the ball straight yet.
Well, I haven't either. If you do, let me know what's up.
Yeah, well, maybe we should golf together. It'd be fun.
It takes a long time. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife just go straight down the road, you know, about 10 miles. You know the course.
Yeah.
Right? There's a couple of them over there. And God dang, man, you know, if there's a couple of guys that are behind us that are pretty good, you know, I'm like, I'll just pick up my damn golf ball.
Yeah.
Man, let's go to the next hole.
Yeah.
And play this one. Because everybody wants to play through, and I don't want to be the one that's lagging.
Yeah.
Because I'm the guy that'll shank one, whether I hook it or shank it, whatever. I want to go, because I just bought these damn balls at the damn pro shop.
Yeah.
It costs hard.
They ain't cheap.
I'm so damn cheap. You know, I'll go out there, and if you see a red stripe or a black stripe on a ball, I'll play with those practice with those range balls.
Yeah.
But God dang, yeah, I ain't worth a damn. I just like going out there. I bought the only club that I have, because we'll just borrow their clubs or rent them, whatever we do out there. I got a driver. Mm. I go out there, I'll knock the shit out of some.
I could see you doing that.
Sideways, but yeah, and again, they always got some mule deer down there.
Yeah.
Can't hit quite far enough to get one of those mule deer.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're targets that I aim for.
Yep.
So what are you trying to do with the golf game? And how close are you to the PGA as far as following it?
I'm really close with it. I watch every tournament. And like I said, I actually did like some Facebook Live stuff with them a couple months ago at a tournament. And I've always loved golf. I mean, you know, Tiger, he kind of blew it up and it was fun to follow.
Tiger did blow it up.
Yeah, yeah. So, and my dad got me clubs when I was like 8 years old. So, you know, that's what was cool is when I was a kid, my dad, he dabbled in everything with me. It wasn't just, here's a motorcycle, go figure it out. It was like, hey, you want to golf? Let's try this. But it's hard to explain. I've tried to explain it because so many people on my Instagram get so pissed at me. They're like, dude, old man sport. How can you go from riding dirt bikes to this? And my explanation is, you know, I spent 35 years of my life waking up nervous every day, and, you know, competitive nervous. And you have to respect the motorcycle. Every time I throw a leg over that, something could happen, you know, and I don't ever think that I'm going to crash, but you always have that feeling, you know, you just, like I said, you got to respect it. So, you know, 35 years of doing that every day of my life, you know, thinking about it. And now golf, it's like, I can wake up, I feel normal, go out, have, you know, a couple beers with my friends, whatever, listen to music. I'm on grass. It's nice weather. It's not, you know, dirt bike noises and pyro and loud music, you know, and it's just been such a 180 from what I grew up doing. So now it's fun for me to go out and enjoy something where, like I said, I got the competitive nature of like, I want to be decent at, never like a tour guy or nothing, but you know, if I show up to a course, I want to be able to try and play good there. But, you know, just no feeling of getting hurt or injured or, you know, having to replace motorcycle parts all the time. It's like you said, my biggest issue now is golf balls. You know, motorcycles, you got tires and top ends and handlebars and, you know, everything. So it's just been a nice change. And it's, you know, like I said, it's just a good, relaxing part of my life now.
My problem when I took up golf was, you know, I figured, hey, man, I'm a good athlete. I'm pretty good at anything athletically that I want to. I can't play pro at everything, but I'm pretty good. So I figure, hey, man, when I pick up this golf club and put that golf ball on ground, I'm going to hit it straight right where I want it to go.
Yeah.
It don't happen like that.
No.
And, you know, after hours and hours and hours and weeks and years of playing, you finally become as accomplished as you're going to get. But I ain't worth a shit.
Yeah.
It is a tough game.
Yeah.
And when you see someone, those pros, take that tool, that golf club, and use it with the intended purpose, with backspin, the angle of whatever the number club is, how they're able to place that thing, where they're playing a draw or the wind, this, that, or whatever. I don't speak the terms, but I've watched those guys manipulate and place that ball It is fascinating.
Yeah.
It's a damn, you know, a club at the end of a stick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like a caveman out there.
I am
too.
Did you
ever see the Munsters, that episode where Herman Munster played golf?
No, I didn't.
Oh, he tore up the greens because he was so
– Yeah.
I digress. Cliff, are you into the golf game?
I am. I Mason here drug me into it, you know, so – luckily, I have a coach, you know. He'll give me some pointers. Don't let him fool you. Dude shoots par at our local course over here. So he ain't
shot par.
He ain't.
Usually I'm in the 80s somewhere.
He's sandbagging you a little bit. But, no, it's fun. Like he said, get out and I try, you know. And we've golfed all over the country now together. You know, we're in Florida last year, golfed a real nice course over there. But I try. You know, I do my best. I'm still bad. I'm like you. I just want to kill the thing when I get up there, but that's not the way to do it.
No, man, we'll go out there and be like, if it's just me and my wife and, you know, I'm good on a tee box, you know, I might hit one 10 feet. I might whack one, you know, 250 and slice it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I might hit one straight, just drill it.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you roll up and then you're out there by yourself. And then all of a sudden there's three or four golf carts and they're all watching you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only imagine the pressure of the Masters or whatever, the world and everybody there is watching you. I got like 8-10 dudes, and because at one point in my life I was Stone Cold Steve Austin,
I'm
on a tee box.
I was going to say,
golf all the time are watching me.
Yeah,
you're worried. I hit that 3-footer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, come
you're worried
on,
about a tee box when you come from WrestleMania, everyone, the whole world watching you there.
Yeah.
You don't care.
Yeah,
man.
But it's something you're confident. That's what
I
have to explain.
When
you're
good at.
Yeah, when you're good and confident. Like,
you'd figure that pressure, you know. I know how to block that out.
But no, it's.
It doesn't transfer.
It doesn't.
Yeah, and then you go play with these guys, and the rule is if you duff one off the tee, don't hit it past the ladies, you got to tee off the next one with your pants down.
Yeah.
So you got that. There's pressure.
Yeah, we still play the bachelor rules a lot.
Yeah, I play a lot of mulligans.
Oh, yeah.
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 I'm good at best ball. Like, you know, if we're going to play with somebody, you're going to play best ball because that way you can at least be in the game.
Yeah, you get some shots
and
out.
And if I do, all right, I've saved up enough money and I got a bunch of shitty balls or I've had them for a while and I'm not out there tracking in the rough trying to find it. Just play best ball. That way you can get through.
Yeah.
And you can actually have fun doing it without being frustrated.
Yeah. We actually did that. One of our buddies got married last year, so we did his bachelor party out at our local course here. And we just did three foursomes, best ball. And we did, like, what'd we do, drinks or $20 or something?
Yeah, well, each hole was worth beers.
Beers, yeah. But, like, 90% of them couldn't golf. But like you said, they had the time of their life because they used one of their drives where he just accidentally roped it right down the middle and then everyone gets to play from there or whatever. And that's what's cool about golf. And even in my aspect is, you know, like one of my buddies is actually trying to qualify for the U.S. Open this year. And there's times where we'll play same tees, same everything, and he'll bogey and I'll get a par. You know, like he couldn't hop on a motorcycle and come jump 75 feet with me and do the same backflip as me. So I think golf's a little more relatable to the normal person than, say, like what you and I do. You
right.
know what I mean?
Cliff, do you still ride your dirt bike?
No, I don't even own one.
Really?
My whole shop's full of everyone else's stuff.
I know. I've seen your shop. You get that badass bike hanging from the rafters.
Yeah, and that was actually one of Mason's. That was one of our X Games metal bikes. That was just a cool bike. Good story behind it. One of my favorites that I built, and he gave it to me after we retired it, and I hung it up in the shop. So, but everything else besides maybe my boat and my tools, everyone else, all the motorcycles you see in there, not one of them is mine.
Yeah.
So I thought you were going to give me some answer that no, you still ride, you just ride at a slower pace. But that's what you do, right, Mike? I mean, you just don't do all the crazy stuff.
Yeah.
You still ride?
Yeah, I still want to do, like, I don't have a freestyle bike anymore for the ramps and stuff, but I definitely want to just go out here, trail ride. It's great exercise, you know, if I go out and ride 5-10 minute lap or minute motos or whatever.
Yeah, but are you living local or are you live in Reno?
I'm local.
Okay, so you're local, but see, my issue with this place is I got a KLX 450 on there, and it's 2008 model. And there's probably 3 hours on that bike because I used to keep it in South Texas in my barn, and I was never there.
Mm-hmm.
We got so many flat tires back in the day because of that terrain. There was no sense in riding it.
Yeah.
I didn't have all the tire technology that they have now. Anyway, out here, dude, I took it out here, and it's everything. Everything is – how do you describe this terrain out here? Because it's – it's hard ground, but it's loose pack.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
It's kind of like a shale top or something. You know, and this area is weird because you're close to the mountains. You get like the rocky kind of, you know, I'm out in the desert where it's sand and, you know, all the weird stuff, like gravelly type dirt. And I mean, it's all I know, though. I mean, I've lived here my whole life, so I just kind of got used to riding it, but I could see how people wouldn't really care for it much because it's so hard packed, slick, and, you know, kind of unforgiving. You know, you can go to turn and lose your front end and just there goes half your elbow.
Yeah, my buddy, because I was going to sell that bike, and I got my four wheelers and my side by sides, and my buddy rides. He goes, "Oh, Steve, you just need some seat time." I'm like, "Man, dude, I'm kind of over it. That bike has been sitting for so long. I just need to get rid of it because all I'm going to do is get good enough on it just to smoke myself." Mm-hmm. And just be like, "Dude, you just sold it when you had the chance."
Yeah.
So I'd get some kind of story about how you were able to put it away.
Yeah, and I did, and then it got so busy, you know, and I was working on them so much. When I'd have any free time of my own, the last thing I wanted to do was look at a motorcycle.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got into some other forms of racing, some drag boat racing, and real into NHRA stuff. So I was kind of paying attention to that, and dirt bikes kind of took a back seat. Yeah, so no more dirt bikes on my end, but, I mean, I still do Mike stuff, still just did his new build, but I got another business going, as you know, transport business, but still involved with racing, drag racing, and boat racing a lot.
Yeah, but talk about your business just for a second, because you changed the name of it. You've been hauling my cars and trucks now for a couple of years, and I can't remember how I met you, but you go back and forth all over the place, but you go back and forth from Reno to Los Angeles a whole bunch, but you go everywhere, damn near.
Yeah, we'll go wherever. We chase the money, so wherever it's paying the bills, we'll go. I've actually got Mace here to go on a few trips with me. Doing a lot of high-end cars, moving right now. We do general freight as well. We can pretty much get everything hauled that you need. New business called TransTech Freight Systems. And, we've been hauling crap everywhere, you know, your cars and my main lanes, you know, from here to LA and back and over to the Bay Area. But we did some show cars for SEMA for some of the top fuel teams, did a dragster for Clay Milliken and a funny car for Paul Lee and some other trade shows for Kalita Motorsports. And one of our longtime sponsors, Mack Tools, we did a tool fair for them and took one of Mike's bikes there, put it on display, hauled the dragster down for Mack Tools. So kind of tying all this sports stuff we did in the past in with this new venture I'm doing, so it's working out.
Well, find you if they got something to haul. And like I said, I know you, so I always call you when I always appreciate it. Hey, Steve, I'm coming through L.A. You got anything? Thankfully, I haven't bought another car to haul because I don't know what to do with what I got. How do people find you?
TransTechFreightSystems.com, and then you can go to my Instagram, which is CliffyC_NV. And all my info's on there as well for the hauling side of things.
Hey, man, before we get out of here, I want to get back to Mike as well. But tell me about some of this drag boat racing that you're highly involved in or really interested in.
Yeah, so
that stuff looks fascinating.
It is. It's really cool. Unfortunately, it's kind of died down in the last couple years.
It has.
The series lost its title sponsor, but they'll get one back sooner or later. But, yeah, I teamed up with these guys world champion drag racers actually on the asphalt side, but they have a couple flat bottom drag boats, and I'm lucky enough they let me tune them, and we have two blown gas flat bottoms, and we have our first race of this season in Bakersfield in 2 weeks. March 20th will be our season opener, so goal is to set some world records this year and kick some ass.
What distance is y'all running?
So our class is 1,000 foot. They kind of shortened everything up from the quarter mile stuff because
everything got shortened.
Stuff started water. Yeah, stuff started getting so fast, so quick, and a little bit dangerous, and nothing really good happened after between 1,000 and 1,320. So almost all sanctioning bodies have shortened the pro classes to 1,000 feet.
What kind of speed you guys hitting at 1,000 feet?
In the drag boats, we're going from a dead stop idle to about 140 miles an hour, you know, with a blown gasoline engine in about 6 seconds flat. And then, you know, the top fuel cars on the asphalt side, they're going dead stop to 338 miles an hour in 3.5 seconds. So it's the hardest accelerating thing on the planet. It accelerates harder than the space shuttle, a top fuel car will. So they're neat. That's why I like it.
You know, we did a when the shows that I host, Straight Up Steve Austin, we're going to go down to Irwindale and race, and I drag raced Fluffy Gabriel Iglesias. He had a 77 Trans Am. I got that 74 Z28 in there, and I thought he was going to run a quarter mile old school. You know, I did. We just, when we grew up in South Texas, we would go down to a section of Farm to Market Road, and we had a quarter mile measured out. And then I found out we were going to be running the eighth. That's like a heartbreaker to me because, that, you know, that's how out of tune or out of touch I was with drag racing. I kind of got away from it. We used to have a funny car, the Stone Cold car, and Jerry Tolliver used to drive that thing. All of a sudden, I found out we were running the eighth. So I was like, I guess that's the thing now because they're making everything shorter. Because, well, in my Camaro, it wasn't like I had to, any kind of speed to I think I hit 75 in the eighth.
Right.
Yeah, which for – and the car was running rich. But just for a car that's just a stock car with a 383, I did all right.
Yeah.
And did good enough to be fluffy.
It sounds slow, but it's really not to go close to 100 miles an hour, you know, 660 feet
yeah.
to the eighth mile is still quick. And until you're in it, you don't really appreciate it. Like, your car's fast. It runs good.
Yeah.
You know, for a little street legal.
Yeah, for anybody out there on the pro circuit, if you think I'm going to turn pro, don't get worried. I'm not turning pro. So, Mike, what do you got coming up? And what's plans for the future? Where can people find you? What are you doing?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I thought I would just take the rest of 2019 after I stopped riding to kind of sort my life out. Now it's 2020, and I'm still sorting. But, no, I got some good stuff going. Actually, in a couple weeks, going to go do a golf trip with Short Par 4. They're a company that they're like a membership club. Like, you spend $40 a month. They send you a box of clothes every month, and doing some fun film stuff with them. Go straight from there to Traeger Grills headquarters in Salt Lake. They always do a fun, you know, once a year party, whether it's a grill launch or an influencer hangout or whatever. And their parties are fun. I mean, you can imagine the food there and the Bloody Mary bar, you know, the mimosa bar, all that stuff. They take good care of us. So looking forward to that. Definitely do X Games again for the TV stuff. Commentating, I really enjoy that. It's fun for me because I spent years of riding X Games having two guys in a booth that have never backflipped a motorcycle telling me what was wrong with my run. So for me to actually be up there and be like, he messed up a little bit, but this is a tough course or a tough jump, you know, I kind of like giving my input a little better. So do that, do the golf stuff, definitely get back into riding a little bit. I'd like to still do some shoots with some of my sponsors. You know, I've been fortunate enough to stick with Fox Racing for almost 20 years, Hart and Huntington, Ethica, a bunch of these companies still support me, even though they know I'm fully done riding contests and demos. So, you know, hop on the bike, go do some shoots with them and just stay busy. You know, it's hard, as you probably know, going from, you know, doing something for your whole life and then stopping. It's like the last thing I want to do is just sit at home, get old, grow stale. You know, it's like, I still want to be out there. I still want to be involved with my sport as much as I can, as well as branching out to golf, to grilling, to whatever else it may be.
Hey, man, one of the things I wanted to ask you when I was watching the kind of the motocross speed and style, isn't that what it's called, mm-hmm. competition?
Yep.
Man, who's judging that? Because you're riding against, in that heat or whatever, against one of your riding buddies,
mm-hmm.
and you came out like 0.5 of a point ahead. You won, and you beat him in the race.
Yeah.
Dude, who's judging that?
It's usually a panel of ex-freestyle riders. And some of them are good, some of them aren't good, but we always have like a head judge that's sometimes suspect. He has to overlook all the scores, and he's usually a guy that's never rode. So judging's weird. It's one of those things, like, I've bitched about it a lot in my career, but I've also been on the other end where I'm like, I didn't ride that good, and then I get top three. So I try not to complain about judging too much.
No, but I was just wondering, because sometimes I'm watching some of these UFC fights, and all of a sudden a score come in, or this dude just got his ass handed to him, and the other guy, he ends up winning the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, I do a litmus test.
Yeah.
My eyeball says, you know, you just lost the fight.
Yeah.
They said he won, so that's why I always wonder.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, it could go like
especially
that.
Because something, you know, it can be, you know, that's very subjective.
Yeah.
You know, there's some technical merit, but obviously everything's kind of subjective to what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the ongoing mystery, you know. And like I said, I mean, I try not to complain because I've been on both ends of it, but it is kind of frustrating, you know, because I've had talks with the judges. Like, there was one time I think I was like, at the last year I did speed and style in Austin, actually, I felt like I rode good, and I did kind of the same stuff I had done the year before when I got a gold. And, you know, I was like eighth place out of nine dudes in the freestyle part of it, not the speed, just the freestyle in the qualifying. And I went and talked to my buddy, and he was like, oh, well, when you did this trick, your leg was bent just a little bit. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, why are you just nit? Because I'll watch other guys and I'm like, that was the sloppiest trick I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I felt like when it came to me, it was my friend, you know, and luckily we're still friends after all that. But it's just like sometimes they get a little overcritical on some stuff.
All right, dude, you're still a young man. How are you on a level of pain after all the years of racing and the freestyle stuff where you met your demise in the form of a crash?
Yeah, honestly, overall, I'm pretty lucky in our sport. You know, I did a couple ACLs, had some bad shoulders, and those haunt me a little bit. Like, squatting down is never fun, you know, when I'm marking my putt on the golf course or trying to get my rotation. But, dude, overall, I can't complain. You know, my back's a little tight in the morning when I wake up, but you know, just chalk that up to riding for 35 years in compression. You know, it wasn't necessarily a crash or something that did it to me. So, you know, like Deegan, Pastrana, Metzger, those guys, man, they've been through hell and back, you know, with their bodies. So all in all, I'm actually pretty good.
Hey, man, Traeger came and brought me out a smoker when I was filming the Broken Skull Challenge a few years ago, and I've damn near wore that thing out, so I love him. How did you get tied in with Traeger?
That was a funny deal, actually. I was on tour, Nitro Circus Tour, and one of the original TV show members, Street Bike Tommy, he's a huge griller. He actually owns a barbecue shop out in Maryland now, and he does really well. But, you know, all the other freestyle motocross guys, they're talking about Instagram and talking about this and that, and for some reason, me and him were sitting there talking about food. Because I knew he liked to grill, and I mean, I've always loved cooking. My mom's a great cook, so I've always helped her. And he's like, Traeger Grills, you should try it out. And I'd never even heard of it before. And he's like, let me put in a call. And dude, 3 days later, I mean, I was home from tour for like a day, and there was a brand new grill on my deck, and put it together, used it two or three times with two or three different recipes, and I've never went back. I mean, the things are awesome. You know, they make everything so easy. It comes out perfect every time. And that's not even, I'm not trying to plug it on the show. It's like literally, our parties now in the summer, you know, it's like, what can we grill next? And, you know, what are we putting on there?
No, but, you know, the thing about mine is I had the real big one, right? Mm-hmm. And my wife is a vegetarian, so I'm only cooking stuff for me. Dude, I'm not trying to do a plug either, but I just got the tailgate model.
Yeah.
So not really, it is a smoker, but it's basically a quick cooker.
Yeah.
So basically, it's a microwave. It's not a microwave.
Yeah.
You know, because it cooks so fast, it's very efficient.
Yeah.
So I was using that thing a whole lot, and I still do, especially with my chicken and my salmon. Last question I had for you was, or who is the Nuclear Cowboys?
That was a tour that Feld Motorsports put together. It was actually a really fun tour. It lasted about 5 years. Feld's the same people that does Monster Jam.
I was just at Monster Jam 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so Monster Jam, Supercross, all that stuff. They run it all. And they wanted to branch out. You know, Nitro Circus was kind of taking over our world, the freestyle motocross world, and I think they wanted to try and compete with it. And, you know, the ideas were there. Just, I don't know if just it wasn't the right time because, like I said, Nitro did have such a lock on it that the tour never really took off, but I mean, we had a blast. Cliffy was actually the mechanic on it the whole time for the 5 years. And
so it was a riding thing.
It was a full
Corey playing guitar. I thought it was you and your buddies in a band.
No, good band name, but it was a full choreographed show. They tried to make it so like Nitro Circus. It's, you know, they start their segments to a show and, you know, announcer going off telling you everything. Nukes actually tried to make it where it was like a story, no announcer, you know, a voice over here and there to intro the part. And I actually had a cool segment they called The Shadow, and they played like a Tool song. And I would sit in the spotlight, and I rode the whole first segment in just the spotlight. So the whole floor is dark. I can't see the ramp until I'm 5 feet in front of it, you know, because of the spotlight. And then one of my buddies was dressed up in all black, like all black. His, like Cliffy built the bike, dude. There wasn't a bolt on there that you could see. Everything was just black and all his gear. So we would do the same tricks, and it was called The Shadow Scene, you know. And I mean, that still to this day was probably one of my favorite parts of a show I've ever done. And yeah, they had some cool ideas. It just didn't take off.
Yeah. I thought you had much rock and roll stories for me.
Yeah.
Tell people where they can find you on Instagram or wherever you want them to find you.
Yeah. Instagram is Mike_Mason81. I post a lot of Coors Lights and golf on there. So if you don't like that kind of stuff, maybe don't follow me, but yeah, check it out. And then follow Cliffy_NV for all your transportation needs.
Right? I use him. He's worth it.
I've used him for 21 years.
I said so. Mike Mason, Cliff Campbell, enjoyed it. All right, everybody, give me the go home. It's time to wrap up this podcast and ride off sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank my guest, Mike Mason, my buddy Cliff Campbell, for coming on the show today. I recorded this podcast a couple weeks ago while we were down there at the Broken Skull Ranch in Nevada. Cliff, looking forward to you getting my Bronco up here to the mean streets of Los Angeles so I can give this Ford Focus some much-needed relief. Don't forget to rate and review the Steve Austin Show on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends to check us out. If you want to reach me here on the podcast, send an email to questions@steveaustinshow.com. I want to thank everybody for supporting Broken Skull IPA, my beer, from El Segundo Brewing Company. And we're in 17 states across the nation. And it has been received to critical acclaim. It's the best IPA in America, in my opinion. And I want to thank everybody for their support. I'm trying to give everybody I can a hell yeah, a cheers, or a thank you, whatever, when you post pictures on Instagram or Twitter. But just thanks for supporting the beer. I'm real proud of it. And we developed this beer, you know, going over almost 5 years ago. And it's starting to roll out. And we're looking to expand more as we get through these hard times. I'm going to drink a few Broken Skull IPAs tonight while I make some deer steaks from a mule deer I took this year up there in Nevada. I can't even remember what unit I was hunting, but thank you guys so much for the support of the beer. I love it. I'm proud of it, and I think it's a damn good IPA. I want to say thank you one more time to the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially White Castle, Geico, NetSuite, Scotts, and ZipRecruiter. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, we're going through some tough times. We've got to do some social distancing, follow the protocol set forth by, you know, everybody you're watching on the news. We got to get through this so we can flatten the curve and make it on the other side and get our lives back to normal as soon as possible and get people back to work. This is affecting every single one of us, man, and we got to listen up and do our part. If you catch me out in the woods, I'm going to be riding with Kawasaki. And until next time, folks, stay safe out there. My name is Steve Austin. I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Survivor Season 40 is here with 20 past champions returning for Winners at War. Survivor fans know that this is the best Survivor season in years, and we're breaking it all down after each episode on Rob Has a Podcast. I'm two-time Survivor Rob Cesternino, host of Rob Has a Podcast, and we've got recaps, interviews with your favorite former players, and a community of Survivor fans from all around the world. So come check out Rob Has a Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Podcast One app, or wherever you get your podcasts.